in the banner the fundamental symbol of our faith, the cross and the crown. They go together.
Questions? Question is, should churches be licensed by the state?
The answer is obviously no, because then the state is the Lord. And to have licensure by the state is the death of the faith. And this is what the early church fought against and what we are still fighting against. In the past 20 years, I've been a witness in a number of church and state cases involving churches, Christian schools, homeschools, almost all involving the issue of licensure. In one state, at a state Senate committee hearing, where they wanted to have licensure so they could walk in at any time and say, you don't meet our standards, and therefore we're closing you down, we said, we'll go along with that if we can walk into any state school and say, your standards are bad, your results are bad, and we're shutting you down. The senators on the committee were inclined to agree, and so the Board of Education for the state withdrew their demand for such legislation.
Yes. Dr. Rossi, this morning you mentioned that there was no separation of church and state in antiquity, and I think I understood that to be pagan antiquity, and I was wondering how you could comment on Israel's antiquity, and was there any sort of separation of church and state in Israel?
Yes. In antiquity, there was no separation of church, religion, or the state. The state was the source of everything in every sphere. This was not true in Israel. I mentioned in passing that Israel was the exception. In Israel, the attempt by any ruler to transgress the boundary was punishable by God. A signal instance of that involving a very good king was when Uzziah attempted to participate in the sacrificial offerings. The prophets could go and confront kings, and if the king had any trace of godliness, he put up with it. And as with David, accepted the rebuke, even with some of the kings in the northern kingdom who were all, without exception, godless. They did take the rebuke of prophets. Ahab, evil though he was, again and again was rebuked by Elijah and took it. He did not dare transgress. So that, although you had exceptions, and until the latter part of his reign, Manasseh did kill prophets, the division was clear-cut. The state did not transgress within the domain of God in worship, and the prophets in their proclamations of the Word of God. You did have instances. We have reference to it of a preference for false prophets. And you recall in the famous incident when Jehoshaphat linked forces with Ahab's family, he asked, is there not a prophet of the Lord who will prophesy? And my was brought in, and he prophesied judgment.
Dr. Rush, do any
Can you comment on the status of the separation between church and state in this country at this time?
Yes, that would take a long, long commentary because it's a very troubled situation right now. The state since World War II has increasingly moved to control the two key areas that were totally outside the state's control, the family and the church. Today, the control over families is far gone. It's an interesting thing that in the name of child abuse, a great many parents have been taken to court and some have been convicted. Most have been wiped out financially in fighting this. There is a foundation that has been created by these families, the False Memory Syndrome Foundation. And the interesting thing is that these families who have faced these charges, usually against the father, sometimes against both parents, of molesting their children, are almost without exception Christian. They are quite well-to-do. Their income runs between $75,000 and $150,000. And they have been active in the leadership of a number of conservative and Christian causes. Even when they win, they are usually wiped out financially. So they are out of the battle. They've often lost their homes and their life savings. So it's hard not to see this as a deliberate move against people who are leaders in the Christian community. Then we have had attempts to control the Christian and home schools. I don't know how many trials of that sort I've been a witness in. I can't begin to remember. But for years I was traveling all over to be an expert witness in such cases. Those trials are virtually over, and we did win. It was a costly battle, but we won. Now the strategy is twofold, by legislation and by regulation by agencies similar to the Federal Register, putting into the state system a regulation that is root and branch control of the Christian school or the home school. We're defeating those. There is another strategy being used, and that's the voucher plan in some form to grant state aid. Currently, there is one in the hopper in Pennsylvania, and there are five votes blocking it. And I have felt the pressure of very fine Catholic lawyers and friends who called me and asked me to plead with these men to change their votes since they claim to be Christian Reconstructionists, which they are. And I've had to say no because it's an established legal principle which the Supreme Court has upheld again and again that wherever state funds or federal funds go, controls must follow, even if the law is passed says there will be none. Now, I was discussing that early this week, Monday, I believe, with a man whom I regard as the top church and state lawyer in this country. And he is a Catholic lawyer who spent a good deal of his life fighting for Protestants to help preserve their churches and Christian schools. And I reminded him of something that Philip Kurland, who for years put out an annual volume summarizing the legal decisions of the U.S. Supreme Court and their implications. And in one of them, a volume of about 10 years ago, maybe a little more, Kurland commented, he said, "I have never known a law that wound up meaning what its framers intended it to mean because the courts alter the meaning to suit themselves." So that's why it's dangerous to get any law on the books that will involve churches, Christian schools, the families, because they can be made to read the exact opposite. So we have had a battle since the mid-70s. Both parties were very bad in their treatment of us. Carter was terrible in this regard. Reagan was terrible. Bush was terrible. They have all been bad. As soon as they get into office, they assume they have total power. I know that not long after Reagan was elected, I was one of about a dozen to 15 men in the White House meeting with then Attorney General Meese. And I sat at his right hand, and William Bentley Ball, the greatest constitutional attorney, I think, in this field, in our day, if not in this century, was on his left. And we both remember vividly what Meese said when we told him the regulation they were planning to put, and which we were able to kill. Meese didn't think we could get enough of a protest, but we deluged them with the biggest amount of mail they had ever received that date, so they backed off. There was an IRS hearing later when they attempted a regulation, and they had 3 days of hearings from 9 a.m. till 11 p.m. of people, Protestant, Catholic, and Jewish, protesting the regulation of churches and Christian or religious schools. But at that point, Meese, when I said this would lead to the total control of churches and their schools, smiled indulgently at me and said, "We believe we already have that power." Now that's their mentality. The IRS hearings, by the way, were published the first day till mid-afternoon, the federal authorities and the IRS testified. And that was all the media covered. There was no coverage of what the Christians and Jews and Protestant and Catholic and Jews testified to. The only publication that carried a story, not about the testimony, but favorable to our side, was the Wall Street Journal, which carried a story about the school that Kent Kelly has in Southern Pines, North Carolina. And it was a favorable story.
The benefit of folks listening on tape. The question is, what words can we use, what phraseology, to get that idea across to people we see day to day? that church and government should not naturally be opposed, but should be working together?
Well, that's quite a question and a very important one. Let's begin with a very, very down-to-earth practical thing. We Christians are the overwhelming majority in this country. As of 1988, it was shown that there were 91 million Americans 18 years of age and older who declared they believed the Bible from cover to cover and said they were born again Christians. 91 million adults. Add to that their children and you've got the overwhelming majority. But when it comes to government politics, they are the weakest group in the country. And I think there's a good reason for it. They do not put their pocketbook on the line with their mouth. They do not put up money for candidates on our side. That's why we lose election after election. Christians must start supporting Christian candidates. We have an assemblyman in our district, David Knowles, who's a very fine Christian Reconstructionist. Willie Brown was so upset when he was elected that he wouldn't assign him an office, although there was a vacant office or two. He gave him a closet as his office. And David hung in there, and finally he got an office after about 8 months. But he's done wonders up there. Because as a Christian, he's saying, what can we do to everybody on every side? So with John Burton, the man who is the furthest left of any U.S. congressman we've had, and who is now an assemblyman from San Francisco, they passed a law prohibiting seizures of private property in drug cases and environmental cases and so on. You see, the law today, if they seize your car or your home and your bank account, and they usually take everything, on the pretense that you may have been involved in drugs or you may have been guilty of an environmental violation, there are, I believe, 10 agencies in Washington and about 3,000 on the state and county level doing this. They don't return them, even though you're innocent. In most cases, the people, overwhelming number of cases, people are innocent. They don't want to go into some of the slum areas and get the real drug dealers because they might get shot at. So we've put a block on that within California as far as any state agency is concerned. And we did it because we Christians elected David Knowles. And David is not there to fight, he's there to help us. So he found that a far-out left-winger, the furthest out, didn't like these seizures, so he said, let's work together, John. And with that coalition of the extreme right and left, it really worked. That's practical politics. How did that happen? It was because we Christians in our district put up the money. We elected David Knowles. We've got to do more of that. Then it becomes possible to work together because we are active in the political sphere. Now, one of our problems today is a problem that happens again and again in the breakdown of a civilization. And our civilization is breaking down. The people who are very much the target of hostility at such a time are lawyers. There are probably more bad jokes about lawyers than about any other group of people. Why? Because law affects every one of us. And instead of getting mad at the lawmakers, we get mad at the lawyers. And again and again in the history of the world, you suddenly see everybody is focusing on the lawyers. And it's a sign of a breakdown because law has broken down. Well, we have to restore law. We have to make God's law again the law of the land. And we're not going to do it until it is our law. Most Christians have no use for God's law. So how are we going to have a country that is godly? Christians don't pay any attention to the law. A friend and a co-worker, Laurie Eck, a lawyer, who was a very successful lawyer, without working too hard, a brilliant young man. He was earning 10, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, $750,000 a year. In the process, he found that life without faith was meaningless. He became an alcoholic and messed up his life and then found the way back through Christ. And he realized, I'm a mess, the law is a mess, the country is a mess. Why? Well, as a lawyer, he read through the Bible after his conversion, and he said, we have a blueprint here, God's law. If we have Christ as our Savior and the law as our day-by-day guide, we've got it made. So he said, I'm going to start courts from coast to coast that Christians can go to, or pagans, and sign a contract that they will abide by the decision of the court. And the decision will be rendered in terms of God's law. Well, in his own community, in about the second or third year, they settled monetary cases of quite a few $1 million. Millions upon millions. And it was off to a tremendous start. But then the pietists got a hold of it and killed it. And they would say to people, now look, we know he stole 10,000 from you, or 20,000, or 50, whatever the case was. But you're both Christians. Why don't you just forgive and shake hands and forget about it? They forgot about God's law of restitution, and that killed off those courts of settlement. And it killed Laurie Eck. He died of a heart attack when he saw what they did to the great work he had begun. There are so many ways, you see, that we can find the way back. But our problem in this age, and since the early 1820s, it's been building up in this country, older and longer in Europe. Christians have left everything to church and state. Whereas God calls us as individuals to make our stand where we are. And we're not going to turn church nor state around until we as individuals start taking a stand. One of the things that distresses me, I have since the 40s, traveled from coast to coast quite extensively. I've seen marvelous churches that some pastors worked to build up collapse when he leaves.